I mean, you know, what I've found with interviewing, and first I wanted to say that I'm very honored to be on your first show. And thank you so much for asking me. I love Ginger, and I feel like this is a wonderful extension of all the things you do there, like that are informative. And there's always this wonderful serenity about reading Ginger, because I feel like you connect with important things in the world, like goats, and which we don't get a lot of information about. And it's also beautiful to look at. So I am very honored to be your guest. And, you know, one thing I did want to say about interviewing is that for me, it's really figuring out how this person ticks, you know, like what makes them tick? Who are they, you know? And anything that I can kind of get a laugh out of or inspiration out of, inspiration's a big deal, because I feel like that's what the interpersonal thing is like, you know, connecting with somebody and just kind of having that conversation go, which is different than an interview. I mean, I think, do you feel that way?
Absolutely. I think they're fundamentally different things. And I think an interview is in many ways more boring, because you already know that you need a soundbite, or you need this one thing, or a couple great soundbites from it. And it just makes you do a different thing. And you know, the 4 or 8 questions you have to ask, and then that's kind of it. And in these types of things, often you've already told somebody, I only need 15 minutes. And then that means they'll only give you 15 minutes.
Right. Yeah. And also, you know, I think that for me, in terms of like a podcast and an interview podcast, it's really important that somebody come to play with you. If they're looking at their watch, or you're sandwiched in between like 4 or 5 other people who are going to be talking to them, it makes it so much harder. If they actually want to engage with you, that's going to be really interesting for the listener. And I think that's, I mean, I'm sure you have found that in your own, you know, talking to people for news stories or whatever, that's an important aspect of it.
I absolutely agree. But can we go back to what you were saying about the conversation and somebody kind of showing up to play? What are the tricks and tips you use either to make sure that person will come to play, or if you're kind of stuck in something that doesn't feel like it's turning out the way you want it to, like what do you do in those instances?
Well, first of all, I think that to get them to engage with you, I do a lot of research about who they are, and I try to find out like the most interesting personal details about themselves, what they like, what they hate, their opinions, their anything provocative. I never really, my interviewing style is definitely not to attack. I don't feel that brings out the best in somebody, and I don't really need to do it. It's not a political podcast. So I do research, and then I try to find commonalities between us. Like, you know, with James Patterson, who I interviewed fairly recently, the best-selling author in the world, he's sitting in his study in Westchester, and I'm in a closet, you know, and where I have a little studio. And he said, "Where are you?" And I said, "Well," he said, "You're in a closet?" I said, "Yeah." He said, "But where? What part of the world?" You know, and I said, "Woodstock." He said, "Oh, Woodstock. I went to the Woodstock Festival in 1969. And that's how it started. It started like out of nowhere. I wasn't planning on asking him about anything about the Woodstock Music Festival. But it's like, so that was good, because it got him into his personal reminiscence, and we were joking. Did you take your clothes off? Did you use drugs? Were you rolling in the mud? You know, it really gave us a place to start from. And he was very playful, and he was having fun. And that was a big deal. That sort of carried the whole thing. And that's what you have to go with. And for me, I find it's like a funny combination of kind of listening to what somebody's saying, picking up on what they're saying, but yet having a structure to the conversation, so that's not all over the place. And that's a tricky thing. You know, you it's just a matter of doing it enough times where you kind of find that, I think. I mean, have you found that in talking to people? Like, how do you get in exactly?
I mean, it for me, it really depends on the type of conversation or interview you're having. I think a lot of it has to do, and here's a follow-up question for you then after this is, I mean, setting to me matters a lot. Mm-hmm. I used to really prefer to do all my interviews on the phone. When I was in TV, I wasn't often, except early in my career, I often wasn't the person doing the interview anyway. I was doing the pre-interview or whatever. But generally, I've had the most success over and over and over talking to people on the phone. And I think that has to do with the same reasons that you and I like to listen to the radio. It's a mm-hmm. personal space. It feels very intimate.
Yeah.
You and I are on Zoom right now. Luckily, we know each other very well, and this feels comfortable. But in my experience, lots of people feel uncomfortable on Zoom. And so that can immediately get in the way. Also, it's hard to read body language on Zoom. It's also hard, of course, on the phone. So I guess my second favorite would be in person, where you can figure out a lot of things just by all the visual cues that somebody is kind of sending you.
Yes. And, you know, I wanted to mention that because before COVID, I did all my interviews live. I wouldn't do any I did them in person. I wouldn't do them on tape and I didn't do them in a studio. I would go to where that person was. And I have to say that Zoom is not bad because I do them mostly on Zoom and Skype now. But I remember, like, when I talked to Carl Reiner and I went to his house in Beverly Hills and I sat in the chair that Mel Brooks used to sit in every week when he came to dinner at Carl Reiner's house, I would never have had that experience on Zoom. It just wouldn't have happened. Carl Reiner died in 2020. And I thought, I'm so glad I had that opportunity to be there. And the same thing with Norman Lear, who is now 99. I was in his office in Beverly Hills and we were sitting on opposite ends of a couch and he was singing Yiddish songs to me. You know, it's like, would that have happened on Zoom or on the phone? You know, so in person, I think really in a sense is the best. Although I have not found the Zoom situation bad. I mean, I talked to Gabriel Byrne, who is a wonderful actor. He's Irish and he has a very lyrical way of expressing himself. And we talked about his past and he had been in a seminary because he felt he had the calling to be a priest before he became an actor. And he started singing a Catholic hymn to me. And it was just so, you know, it's like going with, if that person comes with you and you go with them, who knows where it's going to take you, you know? It often is just very sweet. So, I think my favorite is still in person.
Well, I still remember, I've listened to this twice, but the Gloria Steinem interview you did is phenomenal. That was one of your first, if not the first, for the podcast, or it was in the first season.
It was the first.
Okay. And I remember how detailed the piece was and the interview was as she's showing you around her apartment. And also, which was somewhere in New York City, I don't remember, Upper West Side, I think. And then I remember you interviewing Lily Taylor in person and her taking you out on into her garden or onto her back porch and talking about birds and all these other things. So one of the things that I have always thought you do really well is not only are you in these physical spaces with them, somehow you convince them to let you go into their very personal spaces. I don't know how you do that. And then on top of that, you do a great job of describing where you are and what we're hearing and what we would be seeing if we were sitting with you.
Oh, well, thank you. I really appreciate that. That's so nice of you to say that. Of course, the Gloria Steinem episode for me was one of the great thrills because she is one of those people, you know, we were talking before about people who will go with you. She's one of those people who is present and is very generous. And I mean, that's, and she's very modest. So that was just so sweet to say, Gloria, you know, I really think you have great taste. Could you show me what you have in your closet? And she did it. You know, she opened up her closet. She said, oh, here's my favorite motorcycle jacket with the spikes. And here's, I bought this at Oat Hippie. You know, it's a concha belt I like. And it was like so Gloria, you know. But she shared it. She was willing to share it. And that was so nice. It was such a nice experience.
So let's go backwards before we go or talk more about the present. So you and I were email. We spoke on the phone earlier in the week, and you graciously agreed to talk to me. And then you sent me this email last night, probably trying to get me to share some more details, which I still hadn't yet. And I'm watching the U.S. Open, and it's like a great night of tennis. And I, when I see it on my phone, I think, oh, I'll read this in the morning because I have to send Carol some stuff. But anyway, I decided to click on it. And you shared this story, which I've known you now for 15 years, I think. I've never heard this story. We've talked a lot about the people we've met, the people we've interviewed. We've talked about our childhoods. We've shared all sorts of things, but I'd never heard this story. And basically what you revealed to me was that you interviewed Salvador Dali, as you say he preferred to be called. I don't even remember now when.
It was a long time ago.
Okay, so I'm sorry, without stepping on you, let me, you please share this insane, crazy, wonderful story.
So it was my first job out of college. And I was basically promoted because this guy who was the editor, I worked at a magazine called Pageant, which was a magazine which no longer exists, but it was owned by a company that owned like a lot of Hollywood star kind of magazines. And so I was hired as a secretary, but it wasn't long before this guy said, you know, I really like you. I like working with you, but you are really a bad secretary. So I think I better promote you. So he did. And I became an associate editor. And one day I was sitting at my desk and I was kind of bored. And I knew that Salvador Dali came to New York regularly and he stayed at the St. Regis Hotel. So I asked my boss, I said, what do you think? Maybe I could call him and maybe, you know, maybe he'd agree to an interview. He said, well, I don't know. I mean, that sounds ridiculous, but you could try. So I called the St. Regis and I asked to be connected to Salvador Dali's room. And they connected me and somebody picks up and he says, hello? And I said, oh, is this Salvador Dali? Yes. I wanted to interview you. I work at Pageant Sunday, 6 o'clock. And he hangs up. And I was like, oh my God, this is crazy. You know, this is just nuts. And then I started thinking, oh my God, I was going to a wedding that Sunday. So I had these visions of Salvador Dali, who is this, you know, crazy surrealist Spanish painter walking down the hallway, holding a leash with a cheetah on one end, because he did have a pet cheetah. I sort of remembered that. So I go to the St. Regis on Sunday at 6 o'clock and I see this man walking down the hall, walking in the lobby down the hallway. And he's got these mustaches that with the ends twirling upward and he's wearing a pinstripe suit and a red tie and he's got a gold tip cane. And I walk over to him, I introduce myself. We sit down and he's with some other woman. I don't know, he said she was a model of his. And the three of us sit down and we start to talk, and he apparently doesn't have a lot of time. So he says, you know, like, ask you questions, you know? So I did. And here's, this is, I thought, hysterical. He was 62 at the time. And he said, I was holding this bouquet because I had come from a wedding. He said, for me? And I said, oh, sure. And I gave him the wedding bouquet. And then he wanted me to order a drink, which I did. He ordered water. And then he said, you know, he seemed a little impatient. So I started asking him questions. And he said to me that I am the craze of the best. And he said he had self-diagnosed paranoia, because at one point he had written, all I do in a paranoiac rage comes to be. And then he told me he was a genius, but he pronounced it genius. And it was such a crazy conversation, Justin. I mean, it was just wild, you know. He was telling me about installations that he was going to do. And then at a certain point, he stood up and he left. And it was 6 minutes after we had started talking. And it was quite an amazing experience to meet this guy. Of course, he left me with the bill and took my flowers, but it was like, okay, I met a genius. That's all that counts.
And did you write it up?
I did. I wrote that story for the magazine. And, you know, I thought of it like recently. I have it in a bound volume, because when I worked there, they gave us these, you know, like 12, you know, magazines in 1 year, and they bound it, and that was sort of a gift. And I looked it up, and it was just crazy, you know. It was crazy to think about him and his muse, Gala, who, you know, showed up at some point in a mink coat, and I was glad I called.
Well, this is a wonderful place to start, but so we're going to pause here for a second. We're not actually going to pause, but
okay.
I have turned into a in a very dark room because the sun just set behind the mountain.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I see you in shadow.
Yes, on 23. So please stay right there.
Okay.
I'm walking over my light. Oh, that's much better.
Much better. Yes, you are in. Yes, I see your face now. Better. Way better.
So that was maybe the first time you interviewed a famous Spanish painter. And then, of course, you had, you know, there's not enough time for us to talk about the illustrious career you had. From what I know, a lot of it in radio. But you and I met in TV news. But I would love to try to segue a little bit and just talk about radio. And the ways in which you eventually did get into radio, and what you liked about it, why you fell in love with it, and why you still do radio today.
You know, it's funny because my first radio job was at doing a public affairs show for a rock and roll radio station that was the number one rock and roll radio station at the time. And it was a time at which not a lot of women were in broadcasting. And so stations were kind of being pushed to hire more women. So I got hired to do this public affairs show at this rock and roll station. But in those years, everybody came through New York. If they wrote a book, if they were in a show, or they made, you know, an album, they all came through New York. And they'd come to the studio. It was an ABC FM station. It was in Manhattan. So they'd all come through. And I got to interview amazing people. You know, actually, I thought about doing a series called Conversations with Dead People, because so many of these people are now dead, but they were amazing. Margaret Mead, Maya Angelou, Flo Kennedy, Betty Friedan, Isaac Asimov, just people who were in the middle of their time doing amazing things. And that was fantastic. And also, I did a series on women in comedy, and it was the first season of Saturday Night Live, and I went to 30 Rock, and I sat in the hallway with Gilda Radner, and we just had a great time and did these this wonderful interview. And then I had Jane Curtin on my show and Marilyn Miller, who was the first female writer on Saturday Night Live. So I had all of these wonderful people, the opportunity to talk to all these wonderful people. And I really cherish that. And for me, you said it before, you said radio is intimate, and it is intimate. And what I like about it is that people can use their own imagination. If they're listening to you, they're still able to have themselves, you know, to think about something or to, you know, it gives you an in to what you're listening to, but it also doesn't take up every fiber of your being, like I think television does much more, or video. I don't know, do you feel that way?
Absolutely, absolutely. And I obviously still work a lot in video, but as I said, I really do prefer, I do not pretend to be a video editor, but I really do like audio editing. I'm not very good at it, but it feels very manageable, and it feels, I do a lot of field recordings on my phone, just things that I can play around with. And it's so much more fun for me. And when I do any video editing, it very quickly feels overwhelming and I'm just not good enough at it for it to feel creative. But for some reason, everything in my brain, everything around audio and radio and music, and like I said, even just field recordings or sound effects, feels much more kind of inspiring for me.
Yeah, and organic in a way, I think. I don't know, maybe. I just always felt more comfortable with audio. Maybe it's because, I did television for a long time, but I think my connection is really with audio. I think you can get across so much in listening to something that, you know. And I think it's actually fantastic that podcasts have, in a way, saved radio, because people, you know, so much emphasis put on video now. You listen to audio in your car. You obviously can't be watching a video while you're driving. So I think that's great. But I think podcasting has just become such an interesting thing. Of course, everybody's got a podcast, and, you know, there are a million of them out there. But you can, it's so such a low bar to entry. You know, you can just put it out there. You know, you could do it. People do it in their kitchens. They record on their laptop. They put it out on some platform, and there it is. You know, it's, I think it's opened up the field to a lot of people, which has been interesting. It's interesting.
So while you've been doing these mostly via Zoom over the last 18 months or so, you've been mostly in and around Woodstock, right?
Yes, I've been doing, I set up this little studio in this, my closet in Woodstock, and I've been talking to people from here. So, and it's interesting because you get to see somebody sitting in their study in Los Angeles, or when I talked to Mark Cuban, he was in Houston or Dallas. I think Dallas, I'm not sure. In this beautiful study that he had, but, you know, just interesting to see a little snatch of people's lives, you know, in their homes, and interesting that they have more time. You know, people's lives have changed because of the pandemic. They don't travel as much. They, you know, they're much more confined. So that kind of connection is really nice to be able to have.
So I don't know if I asked you this beforehand to think about it, but it does occur to me that especially in the first couple of years of your podcast, a lot of the people you interviewed were based around the Catskills, in or around the Catskills. And I'm wondering if that was purposeful or just organic, because that's where you are much of the time. And maybe you could talk about some of those people that you've interviewed around the Catskills.
Well, Robert Klein was coming to Woodstock to do some kind of performance, so we were able to arrange that. And then there were a couple of people who lived around here that I thought were interesting. This woman, Elizabeth Lesser, who started the Omega Institute, which is an alternative kind of healing and learning institute. And then there was a woman who had grown up in Woodstock. Her name is Lacey Schwartz. And she had a really interesting story. She grew up thinking she was a white Jewish girl growing up in Woodstock. She was bas mitzvahed. She had like darker skin than most of the people that she was friends with. And she had kind of curly, kinky hair. And she had heard from her parents that her great grandfather was Sicilian, and that's why she had a darker complexion. And then it turned out when she went to college that actually the man she thought was her father wasn't her father. The man she had grown up with was actually her stepfather, and her real father was black. And so she found out that she was mixed race. And from that time on, she began identifying as black, African-American, and she's now married to this congressman, Antonio Delgado, who's a Democrat from upstate New York, and they have these little twins who go to Hebrew school. And it was just such a great story. You know, it was like one of those like identity stories where you think you're one person, but then you wind up being someone else, you know, and how do you deal with that and all of that. So those were some of the people I found up here that were interesting. And I was able to do, you know, sit down and do tapings with them, which was really cool.
That was, I think that was pre-pandemic. So I think you got to do those in person, right?
It was pre-pandemic. It was pre-pandemic. I also talked to Robert Thurman and never used it because I actually couldn't understand much of what he was talking about. So he's a Buddhist scholar. He's very smart, but he's also quite out there. And it was interesting to meet him. And his wife used to be married to Timothy Leary, which was interesting too. But you know, my thing about podcasts, and I'm sure you're going to do this yourself and feel this yourself, is that whoever has an interesting story, that's really what it's about. You know, it's like that's really what I'm looking for. I'm looking for somebody who really has something to say and a good story to tell. And yeah, I'm sure that's probably what you're going to be looking for too.
It is. And I think I have a long list of people that I hope to interview. And I think some of them are definitely aspirational. I think I'll get very lucky if I even figure out how to find them. But some of them are people I've written about in Ginger, or some of them are people I have met before. But I'm really interested in also trying to figure out a way. So all of these people in my mind are interesting because they're wonderful writers or artists or musicians or on and on and on. But I'm also in my head trying to formulate a way to think about, especially because the show is based here in the Catskills, I'd be really interested in meeting a bunch of new people who I could speak to for the first time, people I haven't met before, people that I know kind of around town but don't know very well. And like you just said, I really do believe that most people have an interesting story to tell. It might not be about them, but often, and I only say that because for myself, like I'm just not that interested in talking about myself most of the time. But I am interested in talking about other people. And I am interested in talking about, for instance, my family. We all have like incredible family stories and that we've been told over the years. So I'm still processing of how exactly I would do that, but.
Yeah. I think it's a great goal. And I think, you know, I think people around here. Well, first of all, you know, it makes me think of the Woodstock Film Festival. That brings in a lot of interesting people to town. It also makes me think of, you know, I don't know if I told you this, but my family doctor, who really was my doctor for about more than 20 years when I lived in Brooklyn, decided to give up medicine, and he moved to Delhi and is now raises grass-fed cattle. You know, and people have these stories, like, you know, you wouldn't think, like, they do, but they do. You know, they come from all different places. It's an interesting place to be, I think. And I'm sure business owners around Cairo have many stories, particularly after this pandemic and, you know, surviving it and all of that. And I don't know. I think you find stories in the oddest places sometimes. Sometimes you don't even know, you know, that it's going to happen, but there you are with somebody with a really interesting story, you know? Yeah. And I think of the woman from Yale with the happiness course.
Oh, Laurie.
That was such an amazing, you did such an amazing job with that. You know, I was very interested in that.
I definitely plan on speaking with her because we've stayed in touch and she's continued. I mean, she obviously still teaches this course at Yale, but she, I think it's now season two or even season three of her podcast, The Happiness Lab. So I'm definitely interested in speaking with her.
Yeah.
One of the things I also want to ask you about, because this is another thing I'm trying to process, is what it's like to you, and certainly what it was like to you, what it was like for you doing live interviews versus taped interviews. So obviously, you know, you shared this story about your first radio job. You had all these incredible people and they were coming in, but those were obviously live interviews, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I'm just wondering if you felt like the energy was different because of that than it might be for more of what you're doing now, which is obviously not live.
Well, you know, they were live. They were basically taped and then played on the weekend. But I did have a live show as well. And the live show had call-ins. And that's always interesting. I know you've talked about doing that. And that's always interesting because you get to connect with your audience and, you know, you get a sense of who's listening and what they're thinking about. And that's always good. I haven't done a call-in in a really long time. I did it on that original show. And one of the interviews that I did do live on the show that I had on the weekend was with Phoebe Snow, who was a singer who had an amazing voice, a very sad life actually, but who thought she was the incarnation of Billie Holiday. But she was a wonderful singer. And we did two different episodes of this live radio show. We did it live. And having her in the studio with me was just fantastic. And yeah, there's a definite difference. There is a definite difference. But you know what? If you're live in the studio with a guest and it's being taped and then it's run later, there's no difference in that. And with Zoom, I must say I would prefer to do an interview, to be in the same room with somebody. And one of the things I always liked about doing the live interviews was I wanted to go to a person's home or their office because they would have things on the walls or they'd have photographs that were important to them and that we could use as a way of like jumping off and talking about that particular thing. I remember particularly when I went to CBS and Leslie, who is that wonderful 60 Minutes reporter?
Leslie Stahl, yeah.
Leslie Stahl had written a book about, first of all, we were able to go to her to 60 Minutes and talk to her in her office. And she has this huge office that was next to Ed Bradley and Mike Wallace. And, you know, all the history in that space was just fabulous, you know. And she had written this book about her grandchildren and how, you know, happy she was to be a grandmother. And so she had all these pictures of her grandchildren all over the place. And we talked a lot about that. You know, we talked about, well, what is your reporting career versus your connection to these children, and how gratifying, you know, how would you judge that? And she told me this story, and it always made me want to go to Rwanda. She said, I went, like, you travel all over the world. Obviously, she's been on the air for so long. She said, I went to Rwanda, and I had this experience with gorillas that was a very, very special event in my life. And it always made me want to go to Rwanda and see the gorillas, because she described it so beautifully, and what it was like to be, to join a gorilla family in the wild, you know? And then I went to talk to Jane Pauley, who had this amazing career on the Today Show. She started when she was in her mid-20s, and she was on there for a long time. And then she had a story about being mentally ill and having to go off the air and being in a mental institution for a number of weeks because she had bipolar disease and apparently had gotten it as an allergic reaction. She's very susceptible to bee stings, and she had been given some medication that they think adversely affected her, and it caused this bipolar situation.
Yeah, I remember that interview.
Yeah. And then so it was the first day she was in this office at CBS. She was back because she's the host of Sunday Morning, CBS Sunday Morning, and she's married to Gary Trudeau, the cartoonist. And she just told the story, you know, and that was live, and it was so emotional, you know. I was happy I was there to have that experience.
Well, one of the things that I think is very clear when you listen to your podcast is that you're making a connection with people. And we were talking about what is important when interviewing or having a conversation, and there are two things that come to mind that I think you're great at. You don't have to answer anything. This is just going to be a long compliment. One is, you just mentioned, you notice things, right? You pick up on things. You go into somebody's home or their office, you're curious. And then two, you listen to people. And that is so clear, because when you're doing these interviews, we have both worked with plenty of people in our professional lives and maybe other lives in which when somebody is having a conversation, either they dominate it or they have a very specific set of questions they want answered, and they don't really veer from those, and they don't even pick up on the cues when they should ask a follow-up question. So I think you're an incredible listener, and that comes through. And as you know, that's where all the best stuff happens. It's not necessarily, it is in the research matters, right, and all the prep you do, and it leads you down a certain road. But then the best thing that happens is when somebody is telling you something and you are actually listening to them, right? They finally reveal something, they might not know it, and then you can pick up on it and follow up.
Well, thank you. I that is a really beautiful compliment. And I find the same thing with you. You're a great listener. You really, I feel like when I talk to you, you take in what I'm saying, what other people are saying. And you do not have this drive to push yourself forward in someone's face to let them know you're there. And I find that it's a kind of intelligent reception that I really appreciate about you. So I give you the compliment back.
Thank you. That's very kind of you. Okay, so here's maybe the most important question. Who's the one person you've always wanted to interview but haven't? They can be alive or dead. And it doesn't have to be one if you can't choose between a couple.
So, you know, I was thinking about that, and I would really like to talk to Bill and Hillary Clinton. I would like to talk to Barack and Michelle. And I think it would be really cool to do those interviews, you know, as a couple, because I'm sort of really interested in both of them as a couple, and or as couples. And I like James. I mentioned James Patterson before. He's become friends with Bill Clinton. They both live in Westchester, and they've written two books together. And on when I was talking to James Patterson, he was saying, "Well, you know, we went out to dinner with them, and Bill and Hillary were holding hands under the table." And I thought, really, that is so interesting, because all this stuff we know about their relationship is, why didn't she leave him after Monica? And they have some kind of arrangement, and they don't really have a relationship. And I thought, what do we know? We don't know anything. All we know is this crap that comes out, you know, on social media, and, you know, all the stories we know about people. And I thought, I really like that. And I thought, if I could get them in a room together as a couple, I'd be really interested, if they would talk, to hear what they had to say about, you know, looking back on everything that's happened to them. And, you know, not the Monica Lewinsky thing, but the just, you know, meeting in college and, you know, having a life together that was so, you know, has gone on for so long and is so interesting. And the same thing with Barack and Michelle, who I think, I mean, he's 60 years old, you know, he's young, you know, he has a lot of stuff to do in life, and he was president for 8 years, and he's so smart, and they have such a relationship that I'd be really interested in finding out more about. So I think those are some people that I don't really think of dead people that much, but I bet there are a lot of dead people that would be really, really fascinating to talk to. What about you? Who do you want to? What's your wish list?
Well, I can't reveal that here today.
Oh, okay.
But I will soon. And so I think, so it occurs to me, I've already taken up 45 minutes of your time. I think I heard Steve's timer go off. I think there's some food happening. And so I'm actually looking at you in your living room at your place in Woodstock right now with your beautiful, relatively new kitchen. Perfectly. You got it done right. Was it right before the pandemic, or was it?
No. Yeah, it was before I think it was before the pandemic.
I think it was too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyway, I don't want to take up too much of your evening, but I did want to thank you. And I wanted to say, it's very clear to me that we're going to have you on the show, maybe on a regular basis. Maybe you could be the voice of reason. No.
The voice of reason. I don't know about that.
Your acting skills, your interviewing skills. Clearly, it would be a lot of fun for me to feature some of some small clips of your interviews where I could, and maybe have you come on and talk about some of those. So thank you, and thank you for all the inspiration, Carol.
Justin, thank you. And I would love to be a part of your radio show. I think this is going to be so exciting. I'm so looking forward to hearing what you're going to do, because you're so creative and smart and such a good friend. So thank you for having me on.